Ladies and gentlemen, fellow slaves of the plantation, welcome to the Vinny Eastwood Show. It's Vinny with a Y because it's the most important question, and Eastwood, like, go ahead, make my news. It's the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? The Vinny Eastwood Show. The only thing worse than the truth is Vinny's jokes.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting right here on American Freedom Radio. What is American freedom? I was just thinking about this, like somebody asked me before, what is freedom, Vinny? Because I'm of the opinion that we're all slaves, and all forms of life are slaves to some other form of life, you know. Lions have prides, and there's some slave-running lion that's in charge of that puppy, and ants have a queen, and so does New Zealand, and just, if we're all slaves, what the hell does freedom actually frickin' mean, right? And as the Founding Father said, it's eternal vigilance. That's it. You're free now to spend all your time protecting your freedom. That's exactly what it is, isn't it? Oh, you're so free. So free. Oh, my God. Speaking of free, I'm going to be some articles today, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know how heated it's going to get, but hopefully slightly more heated than my offices at the moment. And hopefully it's very cheap to heat. Now, anyway. John Key given Australia's highest honour. Or rather, John Key given highest Australian honour. Now, I know what you're thinking. What? John Key? That guy who in 8 years got a country from $8 billion into debt into $200 billion worth of debt? Is receiving a friggin' award for his service to the country? Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. Now, the thing is, I'm just going to start reading it because it's, oh my God. Oh my God. Sir John Key. Right, he already got knighted. Sir John Key. I can't even say it without phlegm building up in my throat. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. Let me give you a bit of a background into why I feel so crazy today. Last 3 days in a row, I've been getting up at like 4 o'clock in the morning, loading up on coffee, and then spending all day editing my friend's video. And I finally finished yesterday after 3 freaking days in a row working on it. Not including the fortnight at least over the last couple of months collectively that I've put into that video, but in either case, I'm feeling a little under the weather. Because it's cold, and there's no food in the house, and we're broke, and we couldn't pay our rent last week, and we can't pay our rent this week, and a whole bunch of people have stopped donating to the show, and I keep getting abuse on YouTube all the time, and I keep getting abuse on Facebook all the time, and people don't share my shows, and people don't watch my shows, and I see whole bunches of other people doing 4 minutes of very brief minor analysis of mainstream media articles, getting thousands upon thousands of hits in a day, and I do complete in-depth interviews with really important people, and I maybe get 1,000 hits in a month. People don't have the attention span and all of that kind of thing. Those of you who are sharing my shows, who are, you know, listening to them, thank you. Like, really, thank you. Because there's so many people who just don't. They don't care. It's like, oh, this guy's busting his ass trying to save humanity? Fuck him. But, you know, thankfully, the New World Order hasn't brainwashed us all to be really lazy, selfish scum, right? You know, some people are still generous. And I really like that about my listeners. Very, very good people. On with the article. Former New Zealand Prime Minister John Key is set to receive Australia's highest honour. Oh, God, I can't even. I just got this twinge in my neck right then when we're reading that frickin' sentence. Mr. Key will be appointed an honorary companion in the Order of Australia in Canberra on Tuesday. Canberra is the capital of Australia, much like Wellington is the capital of New Zealand, for those of you who don't know about capital cities. of these nice little Commonwealth slave colonies we've got down here. Australia, named after AU, which is the symbol for gold, which is why it got its name, because it was a gold mining colony. Yep, that's right. After the Governor-General approved Malcolm Turnbull's recommendation to give him the accolade. Now, apparently Malcolm Turnbull's a bit of a corrupt scumbag, as is every Prime Minister Australia has ever had, theoretically. But anyway, John was an outstanding leader of his country. Oh, technically it's true, because the outstanding leadership that he showed this country is just beyond compare. And he is respected around the world for his influence in our region and beyond. Now, what's the definition of respect, I wonder, when you apply it to respecting John Key? Does respect exist if it's only one way? Like, I really respect you.
Yeah, well, I don't respect you, or anything about you, or anything you say. In fact, fuck yeah.
Now, anyway. He was also deeply committed to advancing the Australia-New Zealand bilateral relationship and pursuing our common interests in the region and internationally. They're both internationalists, sounds like. And here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen. If somebody is named Sir, watch out, all right? Because, my goodness, do these people who are psychopathic freaking control freaks love to give themselves accolades, love to pin medals on their chest, love to have, titles and so on and so forth. You know, they can't help it. They need it, all right? They need it. A pathological need for respect and idolization, and they have no way of earning those accolades, honestly. All right? Just trying to show you that. And to give an example, Sir Roger Douglas. Those of you who aren't in New Zealand and weren't alive during the 80s, perhaps, don't know who this guy is. Okay, he basically went, oh, well, you know all these really wonderful public services that you've got, New Zealand, that has zero unemployment, zero this, zero that, zero the other, like the perfect place to live, no poverty whatsoever. Then we're going to get rid of all of that, and we're just going to bring in massive private banking cartels to issue our currency and buy up all of the remaining assets, so that everybody who is currently working in New Zealand and busting their ass will either have their industrial firm that they're working in shut down and put 100,000 people out of work, so that we can drive down wages, destroy workers' rights, and make sure that every single thing in this country costs a hell of a lot more tomorrow than it did today. Roger Douglas. Who then became Sir Roger Douglas after doing that. Okay? You want another example? Okay, I'll give you another example. Sir Peter Jackson. I'm sure you all know who he is. Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit, that kind of thing. You know what he did in order to get The Hobbit here? People in this film industry in New Zealand, burgeoning film industry, right, used to have these things called employment rights. Okay? They used to get this thing called holiday pay. Okay, they used to be employees, and employees have certain rights, certain benefits, that kind of thing. What Sir Peter Jackson did to this country in order to get the three Hobbit films here, which nobody liked, was he abolished, with the help of John Key, all workers' rights in the film industry in this country. All of them. Nope! You're all private contractors now. Nope, you have to do all your own taxes. Nope, you don't have 15-minute guaranteed breaks. Nope, you don't have this. Blah, 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 blah. Gone. So then Peter Jackson became Sir Peter Jackson. And then John Key gets the country into $100 billion in debt on the books, and the books are cooked, and $100 billion off the books, and those books are cooked too, for derivatives debt. Stands down as Prime Minister just in the same year, coincidentally enough, that New Zealand's starting to be investigated for massive fraud and money laundering. Stands down and then becomes Sir John Key. And then not a couple of months later, less than half a year later, he gets the highest honour in the Australian, you know, it just... The things that we are taught to respect in this country and around the world, I think. We live in a globalised society now, I think we all accept that, are lies and scumbaggery, all right? That's what we're supposed to love, that's what we're supposed to respect, that's what we're supposed to look up to. They get all the titles. They get all the accolades. What are people like me or Penny Bright or any other activist in this country that actually gives, that actually cares, essentially, about anybody other than themselves, right? What do we get? We get called rent-a-mob. We struggle to survive on a daily basis. And... people think we're crazy. Yeah, that's what you get. If you're a scumbag, psychopath, no conscience whatsoever, promoted to the Prime Minister, massive banking career, you get knighted, you get the highest honour in Australia. You see how the system works? Okay? The exact opposite way to how you think it should work is the way it does work. And, people don't really get this because they're, oh, but that doesn't make sense. Why would ruthless, criminal, sociopathic, scumbaggery mother effers just like not be honest about how much badly scumbaggery they are? Why the charade? It's because if you don't run a charade on people, they don't support you and give you your pathological narcissistic supply. The Prime Minister said Mr. Key helped drive economic growth in Australia and New Zealand. Got a couple of articles to read after this one, which will kind of really, really elucidate just how much our economy has grown since he became the Prime Minister. Oh, okay. What did he used to do for a living? Well, he sold derivatives on Wall Street and collapsed the global economy. What did he do before that? Well, he sold derivatives in Ireland and collapsed the Irish economy. Well, what did he do before that? Well, he sold New Zealand currency in New Zealand and collapsed the New Zealand economy. What did he do before that? Well, he got born. You know, the man's entire history is destruction, 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 the economy. That's his freaking game. He's a maestro. This guy is the freaking Wolfgang Mozart of scumbaggery. It's just, oh my God. The level of scumbaggery. Okay? People don't even comprehend this, and nor should they. All right? Trust me. I comprehend only maybe 10% of the available scumbaggery, which is so much more than I'm even capable of tolerating without getting post-traumatic stress disorders, right? But these guys, they make me feel like I know nothing about scumbaggery. Like I've been ignoring reality my whole life. That's how bad these people are. And ensured his country played its part in tackling international security challenges by sending our SAS soldiers, who are basically, what would you call them? They're assassins. Okay? Just, for lack of a better word. Well, what do the SAS do? Well, they're some of the most highly trained, secretive, and most deadly soldiers in the world. And we send them over places to do peacekeeping, i.e. run around, do black ops, assassinate people, and then bind all of your SAS soldiers with contracts so that they can't talk about it. So that when they come home and they're so traumatized from the things that they've seen, after going through the grueling training that pushed them to their limits and past them and beyond them, to break them down and destroy everything that they are so that they can create something deadly. Right? Then they come home and they're not allowed to talk about these things that they have done with anybody. You know, I feel really sorry for a lot of the SAS soldiers, man. A lot of them become alcoholics. Right? Had a conversation with a couple of Māori boys who used to be in the army. One was a captain. And the other fought in World War II, killed 47 people And he told me that he said it was like spending 47 years in jail. And the captain told me, why do you think we drink every night? So drunk that we can't even stay awake and black out, pass out. And go, why? He says, because then we don't dream. Because it's in our dreams that the people we've killed and my best friend who died in my arms comes back. That's why I drink every night. And I'm sitting there just bawling my eyes out, you know. These people go through the worst kind of stuff, and they get sent to the worst places, and they get tossed on the side of the road like a used McDonald's wrapper. That's how much this country cares about its armed servicemen. It's not entirely dissimilar in the States, is it? You got the 1/4, I think, of the homeless population in the United States are veterans. Because when they come home from the war zones, War Department goes, you know what, veterans are actually a hell of a lot more effective in combat than these fresh grunts that we just trained. Why don't we try and make the veterans go back? But the veterans don't want to go back. They're freaking scared, rightfully so, of getting shot. They're traumatized, rightfully so, from shooting people and kids and seeing their friends murdered in front of them. You know, that kind of thing. So how do we get the veterans to go back? Well, why don't we just put a black mark on their record saying that they're a pedophile or a thief or something like that? And that way, when they go for another job, pumping gas or anything else, you know, they can fly million-dollar helicopters, no problem. They can drive around an Abrams tank. They can level a city block by itself. But you can't give them a job pumping gas. And that's the reason why a lot of the veterans are homeless. It's because they would literally rather live on the street and face the elements and starvation than go overseas and continue to kill other people's kids. Now that is pain and suffering, ladies and gentlemen. And I think we avoid pain, we avoid suffering so often that when it really does come back, we don't frickin' care about the people that it is happening to. Because we don't want to. Because it is painful to share others' pain. And you can't even take it away when you do that. But it does help. It does help when you share other people's pain and you help them to, you know, have their stories heard. I know. Lucy and I look forward to seeing more of John and Brona this side of the ditch, and perhaps John and I can venture out for another paddle before too long. What, like in a pool of New Zealander and Australian blood? Is that what you're paddling around, eh? When the amount of Australian killed in these alleged false flag attacks, where no Muslim terrorist was, it turns out it's like Australian special forces or something like that attacking their own Australians. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? Right? It's a one world system. Governor General Peter Cosgrove will invest Mr. Key. He will invest the investment banker. With the insignia of his appointment at a government house ceremony on Tuesday afternoon. Well, isn't that just lovely? Thank you very much. And moving on from that, this is how great Mr. Key has served New Zealand. It's from yournewswire.com. And I know people don't trust yournewswire.com either. I don't either. Okay? Just to say that. However, after hearing the headline, New Zealand Prime Minister funneled 13.7 million in taxpayer money to Hillary Clinton, a whole bunch of other people went, oh my God, it's your news wire. That's not credible. It can't be right. And I sort of agreed with them. But then I went, wait, hold on a second. I can confirm this. All right. I've got this thing called Google, where you just type in Hillary Clinton, John Key, and press enter. And what happens? A hell of a lot of results come up from a whole bunch of different sources, all pointing out the exact same thing as yournewswire.com. All right. Ergo, it's a credible piece, and that's why I'm going to read it. New Zealand Prime Minister John Key was forced to resign after being caught giving $13.7 million in taxpayer money to the Clinton Foundation. And this is a claim. I don't know if he was forced to resign because, frankly, I think he just had better plans, you know, other stuff to screw with, other places and companies to destroy. And so what new place, you ask? What's he going to destroy next? A little formerly nation-owned airport called Auckland Airport, our largest international airport. He's now their CEO. What do you think is going to happen? Huh? A man with a track record of destroying every single business he's ever worked for, who's collapsed almost every single banking job and institution that he's ever been involved with? Well, he must be able to improve that company then, obviously, you know, because he's got business acumen. According to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade, MFAT, John Key was forced to step down after he colluded with the National Party to funnel millions of taxpayer funds to the Clintons. He is now under investigation. ACCMag.com reports an MFAT spokesman confirmed to the NBR, that's the National Business Review, that between January 2010 and June 2016, $7.7 million of taxpayer funds had already been donated and another $6 million was to follow, keeping to a pledge to donate $13.7 million made by the government organisation in 2013. ACT Party member David Seymour commented, "In a world where New Zealanders can crowdsource to buy a beach, it's not clear what role there is for the government to collect taxes and contribute it to a global charity which is more than capable of reaching out and raising its own money." The big question is, why is our government sending millions of dollars overseas while at the same time cutting funding for crucial services which desperately need the money here in New Zealand? I'll tell you why. It's called, wait for it, drumroll please, theft, okay? It's just that simple. A whole bunch of people get their money forcibly taken off them, and then that money forcibly gets given to somebody else? What do you call that? It's called theft, all right? They may as well be doing it at the barrel of a gun. That's taxation for you, ladies and gentlemen, and that's why I believe in voluntary taxation, okay? If the government sent me a slip with all the possible things that it could spend my tax money on and asked me to tick boxes, healthcare, yep, education, no. Why don't I want to fund public education, Vinny? Well, because they don't really educate people. In fact, healthcare, no, let's get that across too. Why not funding the healthcare? Because it's the leading cause of death in the country, maybe? Interest to the debt on foreign bankers, no, I don't want my taxes to go to paying interest on debt to foreign bankers who created the money out of nothing, no. Military expenditure so that we can go and invade countries that can't defend themselves at the behest of the US. No. You see, you can run down the list of all the possible things your taxes would go toward. And I guarantee you, virtually everybody would go, no, 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 no. And the government would have no leg to stand on. Voluntary taxation. Imagine that. The government would actually have to prove with statistics and evidence that they are spending people's taxpayer money on something that not only doesn't wind up killing them, but is actually being run in an uncorrupt fashion. And I think that it should be optional. You know, do you have an option to pay your taxes? No, everybody has to pay their taxes. Well, see, how does that make me not a slave? Right, if I work really hard and then a lot of my hard earnings go directly to the government who doesn't do anything for that money a lot of the time, how am I free again? You know, doesn't make any sense. To fully understand how Clinton charities operate and decide whether a single taxpayer dollar should have been donated, we first need to look at some of the controversies. Over the past 15 years, the Washington Post can reveal the charities have raised over $2 billion, mainly from big corporates, foreign governments, and political donors. Do you know what that's called, ladies and gentlemen? A slush fund. Hey, Mr. and Mrs. Clinton.
Hello. How are you?
I would like to pass a couple of pieces of legislation that will basically undermine your country, destroy its people, and steal a hell of a lot of money for them and destroy a lot of your essential infrastructure. And it'll make me a lot of money, but essentially it won't make anybody else any money. What can you do for me?
Well, if you give us a couple of million dollars, we'll pass the legislation for you once we get elected.
Thank you, Mrs. Clinton.
You're welcome.
Many have called the contributions pay for play, where powerful donors exchange funds for future political favours. A bit more concise than my sum up, but speeches made up... make up a large part of the revenue stream, with the Clintons earning hundreds of thousands per speech from the likes of big Wall Street banks, including Goldman Sachs, as revealed by WikiLeaks. Clinton's charity has confirmed that in 2012, Qatar donated $1 million to the Clinton Foundation, raising a question of ethics after Hillary promised that while she was serving as Secretary of the State, donations from foreign governments would no longer be accepted due to the potential influence on foreign policy. But of course that doesn't really matter because she meets with foreign dignitaries in secret, which is a violation of the Logan Act, which means you're not allowed to meet with any foreign dignitaries while you're working for the US government, unless given prior approval by the State Department. Why was that law passed? Because when you're allowing your employees who are serving your country to have secret meetings with people who serve other countries, it breeds corruption! It has also been revealed the Clinton charities utilised the devastating Haiti earthquake to implement disaster capitalism. This is known as a shock doctrine. So what you do is you use a, earthquake weapon. Boom! Whole country just in ruins. And then, conveniently, the supply ships that you have loaded up with blankets, food, etc., will then come on in, right? Way, way too prepared for an earthquake that came out of nowhere, wouldn't you think? Happened in New Zealand, happened after the Boxing Day tsunami, happened after Fukushima, happened, almost every majorly advertised, and when I say advertised, I mean repeated in the mainstream media over and over and over and over again, earthquake is often has a little bit of a connection with the use of some kind of geomagnetic weapon. All right? Even, what was his name? The Venezuelan Prime Minister even said that he believed that his country, when it was hit by a massive earthquake, was actually hit by an earthquake weapon. Oh no, sorry. He claimed that Haiti, when it was hit by an earthquake weapon. Okay, that's the Prime Minister of a country saying that on his national television show. You know, it's and everybody just goes, he's crazy, the communist. You know, and he is a communist, and his country is falling apart, but that doesn't mean it wasn't an earthquake weapon. And it doesn't mean the United States ain't falling apart too, you know. It's like, oh, let's throw stones while we're living in a glass house. This sounds like a freaking brilliant idea. Funneling funds into Haiti under the pretense of aid, but only for the funds to flow away from the Haitians desperately in need, and instead to companies who had made previously large donations to the Clinton Foundation. And incidentally, all of these were mining companies. Mining companies, mind you, that the Haitian government had denied permission to open up giant open cast mines in their country to extract raw mineral resources. After the earthquake, all of those approvals came through. Just like that. Coincidence? I don't believe in it. Then there is the $145 million pay-for-play contributions made to the Clinton Foundation by shareholders of the Canadian company Uranium One, a mining company with concessions in Kazakhstan and the US. Uranium One sought to sell these concessions to the Russians, but the deal had to be approved by a government committee due to the implications to national security. In return for the contributions and the extra $500,000, Bill Clinton received in speaking fees from a Russian investment bank, the 20% purchase of US uranium assets by the Russians was approved. Knowing this purchase would mean the production of more nuclear weapons against America's own interests. Look, anybody who thinks that the Russia and the United States aren't working together, you don't know what you're talking about. Okay? Just have a look. What's the Russian logo? It's a two-headed eagle. What's the two-headed eagle also famous for? The 33rd degree of Freemasonry. Order out of chaos. Okay? Now, which country in the world and its capital city has the most highest concentration of Freemasonic lodges in the world? Turns out that it's Washington, D.C. And is Washington, D.C.'s roading system designed in the exact shape of a giant pentagram? Why, yes. Yes, it is. Oh, but they're both big enemies with Russia. They're just playing you. The bankers finance both sides. They get both the politicians in. And then they tell those politicians, look, act like your enemies, okay? That way everybody won't reckon that you are their enemy. Okay? Both of you. Putin used to work for the frickin' KGB. I mean, didn't anybody who is now going all in for Putin, oh, I watch RT, it's so wonderful. It's fake alternative media. There is so much fake alternative media out there that give you 90% truth sandwiched with a beautiful 10% of lies, so that all the facts that they report to you, while they're facts, their conclusions that they base on those facts and the context upon which those facts appear will be muddied. And thus it leaves you feeling confused, incapable of discerning truth and fact from the fiction that you're looking at. This is the problem, is that people go from knowing they can't trust the mainstream media to mistakenly thinking they can trust the alternative media to then going, oh, I can't trust anybody anymore. That's how they get you, okay? That's how you get people who go from the Church of Satan to become born-again Christians, or born-again Christians who become Satanists and then give up and become atheists or whatever. They're trying to corral people's beliefs, I think, because beliefs, you can manipulate people with them pretty easy. You can't manipulate people with knowledge, on the other hand. That's a real tough one to do. Hey, I'm going to give you the complete and utter truth from start to finish, and I'm not going to manipulate you. Well, what does this guy want? As opposed to, I'm going to tell you the truth, and you better believe it, otherwise, you know, yeah, the Muslims are going to invade and just kill us all. Look, the Muslim invasion is a planned agenda. Okay, the UN just released on its own website that the lowering populations in the United States and Europe, due to fluoride being the worst frickin' spermicide and fertility reducer in the world, and people go, oh, but they don't have fluoridated water in Europe. Yeah, but they put it in all the salt and all the products and things like that. They haven't gotten it out, all right? Because your birth rate drops so massively, the UN's now saying, oh, we need to flood these countries with Muslim immigrants. You know, it's going to freak everybody out. Huge cultural backlash is going to happen, and it's going to instigate a war. All right? And that's what these people want. They want the white people fighting with the Arabs. They want the Christians fighting with the Muslims. Just so that we'll think that we're the enemies of each other, rather than knowing that it turns out that both our countries and our religions and the Muslim countries and the Muslim religions all happen to be controlled by Freemasons. Incidentally, you know, oh, didn't see that one coming. Onto another article here. What was it? I wanted to actually get these two articles out of the way here, because it was like, oh, bro, somebody told me the other day, about buying a home or whatever, and I was just like, I did a quick Google, New Zealand housing most unaffordable in the world.
In the world! You get cheaper to buy a house in Calcutta!
The New Zealand housing most unaffordable in the world, The Economist. It's official, New Zealand has the most unaffordable housing in the world, according to The Economist. Across five different measures, New Zealand has come out on top of three of the five measures of the most expensive global housing market. How did this frickin' happen? Well, New Zealand, like Canada and a number of other countries, say, hey, look, are you a person that we haven't run a background check on to see if you're working for foreign intelligence or organised crime?
No.
Well, why don't you just give us money and we'll give you citizenship, bro? That way you can buy up all the houses and businesses in this country that you want. And they'll be logged as being bought by New Zealand citizens. And what does that do to the housing market, you ask? Having a whole bunch of foreign intelligence agencies and organised crime coming in and purchasing up houses that have been there for a long time and leaving them empty? It forces the overall prices of all real estate to go up, which then, because homeowners have to pay rates on a percentage basis based upon the value of their home, they are then forced as well to put the rents up for all of the slaves that live in these places. I am a renting slave. Okay? There was an article that came out nearly 10 years ago that said 50% of Aucklanders, over 50%, will never own their own home. They will rent for their entire existence. They will die not having more than enough money to pay the rent more than a week or two in advance. Okay? That is the reality of this country now. And that makes me very, very sad. And very angry. That's something that only a generation ago was something everybody could afford, something everybody could achieve if they actually wanted to, no longer exists. And possibly never will again. New Zealand has had the highest rise in house prices, costs the most against the average person's income, and now has the biggest difference between house prices and renting prices. In the latest edition of The Economist, figures show that in the past 46 years, New Zealand's house prices have risen by more than 8% on average per year. Does that sound like frickin' insane to you? It's a huge amount of growth, okay? And in economics, in business, when you see any business or economy that is growing at breakneck speed like that, it's called a front, okay? That means that there's something going on, some income that's off the books, or some kind of corruption or scumbaggery going on. Now, basically, I'll just give you the very short version. Banks can create your mortgages out of nothing, give it to you, and you have to pay it off for the rest of your frickin' life with virtually no chance of ever actually paying it off completely. Okay? Hence the problems we've currently got. It's a trend repeated among other first world countries who all have extremely similar banking systems run by Rothschild Central Control Banks, including the United Kingdom, which had a 7.65% average rise annually over the same time frame, and Australia, where house prices rose more than 6.4% a year on average. According to The Economist, those numbers have remained solid in the past 7 years, with New Zealand's numbers showing a 7.9% consistent increase per year since 2009. Now, what happened in 2009? It was the year after the global financial crisis,
and the year we elected a Wall Street banker to be our prime minister.
The Economist puts this trend down to a growing horde of rich foreigners, quote, coming to New Zealand because they see it as a, quote, safe haven. In 2016, overseas investors bought just 3%. of all properties. But their purchases were concentrated at the expensive end of the market, which is growing fast. Sales involving homes with more than New Zealand $1 million increased by 21%. Now, these guys just try to go, oh, it's only because there's a few rich people coming in here buying up the expensive houses that affect the entire economy. Really, 3% of the purchases, right? The findings don't get any better for New Zealanders, showing that in the last 10 years, the average price against a person's income has risen dramatically. The place where I'm living now, they raised our rent twice in the first 2 years living here, right? And we're in our third year living here now. And an article came out earlier this year saying, watch out, renters. Now, the rates are being increased by the local corrupt council, who incidentally got $500,000 or something like that. No. I think it was about $200,000 donated by an anonymous Chinese organized crime donor. Okay, they now run the city. Okay, and it's specifically the People's Liberation Army intelligence and the Chinese triad organized crime who are doing this. And that's been exposed in Ian Wishart's book, which I narrated a few chapters of, called Totalitaria. And if you go and listen to those videos, just search Totalitaria, Vinnie Eastwood should come up with it. Listen to those first few episodes, and he really goes in detail as this thing called the Sidewinder Report, which is a Canadian investigation into Chinese organized crime and People's Liberation Army intelligence, infiltrating Canada, buying citizenship, then buying homes, buying businesses, and hey presto, 80% of downtown Vancouver is Chinese owned. All right? And that was like in 2005. That's over 20 years ago. How much do you think they own now? Okay, these are people working for a foreign communist state who want to do this to you. And they're not even the worst ones that are doing it, is the thing. This is just an example of the infiltration that we face, right? It's not about the Chinese. It's not about the Americans. It's about the system. The system of global enslavement and scumbaggery. Who do you think financed Chairman Mao to take over China with 1% popular support with all these free weapons that just turned up that they could intimidate the entire country with? Rothschild bankers. Interestingly enough, we're all being played against each other. You can't hate the Chinese. You can't hate the Russians. You can't hate the Americans. You can't hate the New Zealanders. What you can hate, though, and I encourage people to use the word hate on occasion, only to describe that which truly deserves it. Scumbaggery. Now, in 2016, the findings don't get any better for New Zealanders. No. The numbers are backed up by the Demographia International Housing Affordability Study, released in January, showing Auckland is ranked the fourth least affordable housing market in the world. The average house price in Auckland is now more than $1 million. In completely unrelated news, want an affordable house? Try post-Quakes Christchurch. Somebody said this to me. I was like, oh man, I'll never be able to afford a house in my own country. I'm going to be a slave renting off of foreigners for the rest of my life. My landlord's a foreigner. But does he come here? Does he even live in the country? No. He gets local New Zealand slaves who work for Barford and Thompson to come over here and inspect the house every 3 months.
To make sure it's clean, you know, make sure we're not screwing it up.
Just unfrickin' believable. The sort of invasion of privacy that has for me, you know, I'm not really... I mean, it's good to get reminded that, you know, you need to give the place a good spick and span clean over a couple of times a year. But it's more the fact that it's a reminder that this is not your home. It belongs to a Chinese national who lives in China and simply collects your money for the Chinese People's Army intelligence and triads, and uses a pittance of that money to pay local New Zealanders who do the job that they can't be bothered doing to keep the other New Zealand slaves who are renting in line and don't threaten your investment. This is where I live, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm sure a lot of you live in this situation too, don't you? It's fucking disgusting. Christchurch is the place to go for affordable housing if a report released at the weekend is anything to go by. Oh, massive disaster zone. That sounds like a great place to live. Who was it? You keep telling me, a bunch of my mates and things like that, they hear about this place down the line or whatever, it's real cheap and such and blah, blah, blah. The only reason why things are cheap enough to afford anymore for the average person is because the average person cannot afford anything good anymore, because all of our wages have been devalued, our currency has been devalued, every single asset that the country ever had that was built up over generations of people's taxation and work for the country no longer exists. That's why. It's actually really upsetting me, come to think of it. I'm just thinking about all my countrymen and they've got no place to live. Got the biggest homeless population per capita in the world. You know, more than India. Does this strike you as a beautiful, great place to live? Where the gap between rich and poor just ever keeps getting wider and wider. Do you know what despotism is? Despotism is when you are ruled by a despot who controls everything, doesn't give you any rights, has huge amounts, more power, more wealth, and everything than you do, and there's nothing you can do about it. Okay? It's a despotic ruler. And it's not entirely dissimilar from how New Zealand is governed. Not entirely dissimilar from how any country is governed, come to think of it. The June Monitoring Greater Christchurch Regeneration Report. Monitoring Greater Christchurch Regeneration Report. That's a mouthful, isn't it? Collates data in six key areas as the southern city continues to recover from the quakes of 2010 and 2011. Bear in mind, ladies and gentlemen, this is a country that hasn't recovered by earthquakes that happened half a decade ago. Why? Maybe it had something to do with the fact that we had a prime minister who was more interested in ousting Environment Canterbury, which actually ran all the resource allocations for the region, and then instead of denying, in the middle of a drought, a whole bunch of incredibly National Party-connected farmers from being able to use more than their fair share of water, they get in Dame Margaret Baisley. You remember what I said about when somebody becomes Sir or something like that? The same goes if you named Dame. Dame Margaret Baisley comes in, takes over ECAN, and then basically it's a coup against the entirety of the governance of Christchurch. And then, coincidentally, it gets hit with an earthquake weapon. How do I know that? Well, did you know that there's a HAARP facility at Birdlings Flat, 15 minutes drive from Christchurch? You didn't, did you? Did you hear the 40 mainstream media reports on the day of the quake of fireballs that were producing sonic booms that were seen in the sky? Do you know that a fireball, that like an asteroid or whatever, like fall into Earth, can't produce a sonic boom? You know why? Because it's travelling at 30,000 miles an hour, bro. You have to break the speed barrier to speed up in order to create a sonic boom. Okay, it's that thing with when Superman's flying or whatever, you know, you go, boom, boom, those are sonic booms. And Quake measured at a exact, you know, 10 kilometer depth. Incidentally, the exact depth that you need to get the HAARP weapon working. You know, it's just coincidence. It was also a coincidence that 9 US congressmen happened to be in New Zealand, including the head of the Federal Emergency Management Association, FEMA. And it's also a coincidence that all those congressmen who were here to have a big meeting with the Prime Minister, which was secret, got on a plane, but not the Federal Emergency Management guy, who stayed behind, and an hour or two later after the plane had left, Christchurch gets hit with a massive earthquake, which was incidentally the most convenient timing ever for the New Zealand Navy, who were just so happening to perform earthquake drills in Lyttelton Harbour, not 15 minutes drive from Christchurch, and were loaded up with blankets and food and disaster relief stuff. The coincidences just keep getting bigger. All right. And the fact that that's the only place, the only place where New Zealanders can now afford to live. It says housing affordability in Greater Christchurch has been improving since 2014. The average weekly rent has continued to fall, with the proportion of private bonds lodged for weeks lodged for rents below $400 a week increasing. For buyers, Christchurch experienced the lowest house price growth among 15 areas in New Zealand between 2014 and April 2017, the report says. For 77.8% of renting households in Canterbury, buying was unaffordable in the June 2015 quarter, down from 84.3% in the September 2010 quarter. Homes are more affordable for first-time buyers in Christchurch because average household incomes in Canterbury have grown faster than the cost of housing since the 2010 and 2011 earthquakes, the report says. The earthquakes of 2010 and 11 damaged about three-quarters of Canterbury's housing stock. The population of Greater Christchurch dropped sharply in the first 2 years following the initial 2010 earthquake, but by 2016 it had fully recovered and exceeded the 2010 population by 5.2%. In the central city, however, there are still 32.3% fewer residents. A third less residents in the central city, you know? Just, oh God. Christchurch is nice, bro. You ever been there? Whew. Beautiful. These big rolling hills on the ends, huge stretched plains that just go on, that just end up in these beautiful snow-capped mountains. You know? It's just beauty everywhere you look. And when I heard that the quake happened, I was just like, oh no. Oh no. The population has also become more diverse with the influx of construction workers. Now, incidentally, when you've got what do they say? Three quarters of Canterbury's housing damaged. You have an influx of construction workers and they say, oh, that's helping to increase our population. That's helping to improve the economy. It's what's known as the broken window fallacy. Okay, now theory goes that if you break a window and then go to the person whose window you just broke and then offer to fix it for them, that you are actually not contributing value, you're instead destroying it because it costs more to replace the thing you destroyed than it does to just leave it the hell alone. Okay, and this is how the economy is having the books cooked. All the frickin' time, man. All the frickin' time, eh? Very difficult to get positive news out of this country, man. All I see is negativity. It's nastiness. Maybe I'm not in the best mood today either. You can't help that, can you, Vinny? So, ladies and gentlemen, I please go to the VinnyEastwoodShow.com and support me. Like, damn it! Please support me! Please! There's only mainstream media in this country, and they're just reporting everything that is full of crap, and it's depressing everybody who looks at it because it's lies, and they're not having their voice of reason reflected back to them. And people like me who actually are trying to get the facts out there, trying to tell people the truth, are not worth supporting, apparently, you know? If I don't have food, nobody cares. If I don't have rent, nobody cares. Right? That's kind of like how it feels sometimes. But I do know that people do care. And I do want to thank every single one of you who does donate regularly through the Patreon and the PayPal and the Kiwi Bank at the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. We'll be back right after the break with more news.